G'day, you mob. Welcome to this episode of Aussie English. Today, I've got a ripper of an episode for you guys. It is an absolute beauty of an episode. Today, I have the privilege and the pleasure of chatting with Luke Thompson from Luke's English Podcast. Luke is from Great Britain, and I get him on today to talk about a bunch of things. Mostly, I was interested in hearing his story, how he started a podcast, became an English teacher. He's also a comedian, and he currently lives in France. So, I was interested in hearing his story, but we also talk about things like social media and raising children, or at least being raised today with all the social media, smartphones, and everything around kids, because we talk about his growing up and what it was like before the internet, right? Before we had access to smartphones and before everything that we did was recorded and put online, right? And then lastly, and I need to warn you, there is swearing in this episode, although it is discussion of swearing. It's not offensive language in terms of Luke and I get into a verbal fist fight and start swearing at each other. But we talk about the C word in English and the difference between how it's used in places like Australia and Great Britain compared to America, because there are some big cultural differences there. So, as a warning, if you do not like swearing, if you do not want to listen to an episode with swearing in the episode, do not listen to this episode, okay? I don't want any angry emails later on saying, "Pete, you didn't warn us." There's your warning. That's the disclaimer, okay? You've been warned. So, without any further ado, guys, smack the bird and let's get into it. G'day, you mob. Welcome to this episode of Aussie English. Today, I have special guest Luke Thompson. So, Luke is the Luke from Luke's English Podcast. And I told him before starting the show today, and I'm sorry, you'll be able to say thank you. And you know, it's good to be here in a sec. But I thought I would tell you the story that my wife, when I met her on YouTube through teaching English, she got onto me and she was like, "Oh, I really like your podcast. It's almost as good as Luke's." And I was like, "Who the hell's Luke?" And she put me onto Luke's English Podcast and I was like, "Ah, that guy. Yeah, I've sent him a few emails, but he never replies." And this was like years back. And she's like, "Oh man, he's amazing. You've got to have him on." So fast forward 5 years and here we are. So Luke, welcome to the podcast.
Finally it happened. Wow, that's funny. Sorry I didn't reply to your emails before. I don't know what happened there.
Man, it's all good. I don't even remember if I sent one. So who knows? Maybe I was high. Maybe I was smoking something, but I'm glad that we're here. Maybe.
But wow, yeah. That's really cool. So, all right. Well, thanks to your wife for sort of introducing you to my stuff. That's great.
I know. Well, it's really funny. It's a small world too, because I was saying to her just before, it's so funny. Every time I interview someone, she's like, "Who is it?" And I'm like, "You're not going to know them. You know, leave me alone. Get off my back. Just you know, calm down. It's some author that you haven't read the book of or whatever." And I said, "Oh, I'm interviewing Luke." And she's like, "From Luke's podcast."
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm more famous than I realized.
Well, it's funny for her because she's from Brazil, having learned English as a second language only a few years ago. And she was learning from all these people. And now I'm sort of in this world talking to a lot of them. And she's like, "It's so weird." And I'm like,
So wait a minute. So you met your wife, and I'm just going to go out on a limb here and sort of posit theory, which is you met your wife, and I suppose that her level of English helps in you two getting together. If she didn't speak such good English, it might not have happened, right?
Exactly. She spoke phenomenal English, so maybe you can claim credit for that.
So I'm now taking credit for the fact that you're with is it your girlfriend?
No,
your
she's wife. My wife.
It's your wife.
We've got a one-year-old son. I owe you my son's life as well.
I'm going to take credit for all of it, okay? It's all thanks to me and obviously all the other podcasters that she was listening to.
I'll just walk out and just say, you know, afterwards.
You're welcome.
He said, "You're welcome." Yeah. So anyway, mate, I wanted to get you on the podcast to obviously have someone from the homeland on the podcast, but also because you have a pretty interesting background. Can you tell me and the listeners a bit about where you were born and where you grew up and what it was like?
Oh, okay. So I was born in a town called High Wycombe, which you've probably never heard of, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think I have. I would be lying, I think, if I said I did.
So it's just sort of just outside London, just to the northwest of London. And, So that's kind of, that's where I'm from. But I didn't really live there growing up. I lived in West London with my family. And that was in the 80s. So there was lots of just sort of stuff playing with Star Wars figures and riding around on BMX bikes and watching films like BMX Bandits. Do you know that film?
Well, it's got Nicole Kidman in it, right?
Nicole Kidman's in
it. She's Australian.
Yeah, exactly. It's an Australian film, isn't it? BMX Bandits, I think.
I just know that she's in it. So,
yeah. As far as I remember, it is an Australian film, and we used to love that film. And it's all about BMX kids, like riding around doing sort of cool tricks on BMXs and stuff. And Nicole Kidman's in it. So, yeah, just fairly normal kind of childhood. And also, we moved to the countryside, sort of in the middle of nowhere, just outside Birmingham. And so, lived there from about the age of 9 till about the age of 18 or 19 when I went to university. So, you know, sometimes spent growing up in London, sometime in the Midlands. And then, I mean, just a normal sort of life in the 80s growing up, you know, as a kid watching Ghostbusters and Indiana Jones and stuff like that.
How much has life changed compared to the 80s growing up in Britain compared to obviously today, you know, 30, 40 years later?
I guess it's probably the same as it is in many places, you know, that the internet has suddenly become so pervasive in our lives that I look back on my childhood and think how amazing it was that, you know, we didn't have the internet constantly there all the time. And also growing up as a teenager, I'm very glad that I grew up without smartphones and without the internet everywhere and without Snapchat and all those different things and Facebook and stuff like that. I, you know, was completely free from that kind of pressure. I'm just imagining going to a party as a teenager these days and doing something stupid, as you do when you're going out and sort of getting drunk or something like that for the first time. These days, you've got to be careful because like everything's being captured all the time. And it's almost like these days, it's starting to get to the point where you have to live your life as if it's being live streamed.
Yeah.
We're getting to that point. I remember once I heard a really interesting presentation from a student at school, and he was a Swedish guy who worked in the government and stuff like that. And he gave this talk. And one of the things he said was, these days you have to live, you have to do everything as if it's going to be published on YouTube. So it's almost like you've got to, you know, you can't really relax as much as you used to be able to in some respects.
The thing that scares me the most in today's day and age is the fact that you will be held to account by the worst thing you've ever done that can be found online effectively. Yeah. So that at any time someone, effectively everyone reserves the right to go through your Twitter or Facebook and find the worst thing you could have said, or at least the worst possible interpretation of something that you would have said. And that can at any time haunt you in the future. I think a good example was that Kevin Hart that got done recently with a joke that he made. I don't know if it was a homosexual joke or a trans joke, but he made some kind of joke 14 years ago, and he missed out on hosting something like the Oscars or something.
I think because, it was the Oscars.
Yeah, because he'd made a joke when he was, you know, almost two decades younger. Yeah. And you're just like, what is this? Like, it's just crazy, right?
Yeah, just also the sort of almost the level of vigilantism that goes on online on places like Twitter, where you can just be destroyed for something, and it's almost like career-ending stuff. Even though it's not really following the rule of law, it's not the proper legal process for bringing someone to account for something that they've allegedly done or said.
Yeah,
these days it's kind of like the mob rule of social media means that people have to watch themselves quite a lot. I mean, you know, to some extent it's good because it means that people are being held to account for the things they say and do. But on the other hand, sometimes it feels a bit like a kind of kangaroo court, to coin a phrase.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Do you say kangaroo court in Australia?
Yeah, I think I looked this up and was thinking, I mean, it's got kangaroo in it. Was it made here? But I believe it's an American expression, isn't it? It may have.
Yeah, I wonder what the origin of that phrase is and whether it's sort of like a politically correct thing. You know, I wonder if it's like...
We'll this find is out if it's a racial slur somewhere. Yeah.
A huge against racial slur. Yeah, on the behalf of the Americans. Well, I think this is, you know, some kind of kangaroo court.
Well, I wanted to sort of get to that part eventually in today's chat with British culture versus American culture, and hopefully the listeners won't mind if we get too rude, because it's going to have to involve talking about the C word. But are you a fan of Ricky Gervais? You're a comedian, yes, right? So you're a big fan, I assume, of Ricky Gervais. Yeah. Have you seen his Afterlife TV show?
Yeah, I watched, I think, the first season of it. Yes, and
so he drops the C-bomb quite a bit. So, and for those of you wondering what that is, I'll say it. I'm going to mark the episode as with rude language, but it's cunt, right? He says the word cunt, and he says it a lot. He says it a lot, but he says it in a very different way from, I think, how Americans would use that word, right? Mm-hmm. So, are you able to sort of talk a little bit about the cultural differences there and the word cunt? Because I find that very interesting.
Okay. So it is, I think, if we don't go into like racial slurs and that sort of language, which is actually the most offensive stuff, really, cunt is the number one of, let's say, the sexual swear words.
Yeah.
Because you've got, like, in swear words, originally you had, like, religious stuff, like damn and blast and god damn it and stuff like that. And then you moved into, like, more bodily sexual stuff.
You read that one?
Holy Shit, A Brief History of Swearing. I have not read that, but that looks fantastic.
It goes through exactly what you're saying, that it started with religious stuff, and then when the religion sort of slipped away, it started turning to sexual stuff and nudity and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, the proper swear words that we use to do things like express our anger or to emphasize things or to refer to people. That's basically sexual words. And cunt, for some reason, is number one. I've talked about this on my podcast before. I've done episodes about swearing, and I've had discussions about this. And so, obviously, first of all, the meaning of the word is not really offensive in and of itself. I mean, we have other words that mean the same thing.
Well, you could just say vagina, right? And it's not offensive in and of itself.
Yeah.
But you would never say, you vagina. You know, you are such a vagina. People would laugh at you.
But we do have the word twat.
And that doesn't hit home. That doesn't hit home for us Australians. Nope. We don't use that. We don't use that at all. So when we hear that, we don't even know that that's what it means. We think it means an idiot. Right, like a ningbat or something, you know, like someone who's a total moron, which I think it means, but it literally means vagina, right?
Yeah, it's exactly the same as cunt, but twat is like several stages below the C word in terms of its tabooness or its rudeness, and yet it basically is the same thing.
Yeah,
it works in the same way in sentences. It's a noun. It means exactly the same thing. It's a slang word, and yet it's not nearly as offensive as saying cunt, which is interesting.
And it just feels so good to say, right? I don't know if it's the taboo or it's the what would you call it? The phonology of the word, the way in which we have this cunt kind of say. A lot of our swear words have that, right? Like shit.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. That's a large part of it. Although twat has quite a good punch to it as well. And, you know, we do use the word twat a lot. You twat, you fucking twat.
See, hear that and it just makes us giggle. I mean, I'm sure you would probably have the same to a lot of ours, but I find it interesting because as I was saying, Ricky Gervais is this famous comedian and he was using the word left, right, and center in the TV show. And Australians tend to use the word, but we don't often see it in TV shows, especially TV shows rated M.
And so I would,
in American shows, you'll never see it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say then that it's like three things. One thing is that Ricky Gervais is doing it on purpose. He's throwing the word in a lot because,
he's Ricky Gervais.
It's Ricky Gervais and that's what he does. He does sort of slightly shocking stuff and he does it very well. So the other two things are, so different levels of the word or different ways the word is used.
Yes.
So certainly there's let's say two levels of it. So one is that it's like a really shocking insult that will shock someone if you say it. And it's not something that you hear on TV. It's like really harsh and cutting and very rude and the rudest word. So if you call someone a cunt, you fucking cunt. It's like really...
I love how your face lit up when you said that. Like, you really feel like, I mean, I shouldn't say it, but it just feels so good.
Well, there is something, there is actually, I think it's been proven that there is a therapeutic effect
cathartic,
in swearing.
Yeah,
cathartic effect. And when we get angry, swearing can really help to reduce tension. So, fuck's sake.
I think they showed that with feeling pain. They had people put their hands in water that was frozen or like close to freezing, and people who were allowed to swear could hold their hands in the water for longer.
So it does actually perform a function, like swearing.
Yeah.
It's almost like a physical thing where it kind of like gives you a little boost or something like that. Or anyway,
look at me using this forbidden language.
But also just it feels nice to get it out. And anyway, so that maybe contributes to how rude it is, I don't know. But
and the second side to it. So that's the first one, that it's just kind of shocking, but then I assume that it's a very shocking word.
In America, certainly, and it's because it's sexualized, because it's referring in a very very sort of direct and explicit way to a body part that's seen to be kind of taboo to reference directly, and so that's kind of shocking in that sense. But then in the UK, I think that cunt is also used quite a lot in a much more everyday and much more normal, familiar sort of sense. So you can talk about, you know, look at these cunts out here.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a collective noun,
and it could just mean people in a sense,
and not like, even a negative thing. You don't even know them. You know, you're just like check these cunts out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We can do that in Australia as well.
Yeah, and particularly in I think up north, and certainly in Scotland. So around sort of Glasgow area, people are talking about cunts meaning people quite a lot.
I didn't realize we were going to linger on this point so much. I'm glad we did though. But yeah, so I think the main point I wanted to get to was the fact that Americans don't use the word at all unless they're using it in a very sexist way from a man degrading a woman, right? And calling her a cunt.
Yeah.
And that is why that's why they avoid it like the plague. Whereas in Australia, I think it would be the inverse, where you can use it on women, but I think the majority of the time you will ever hear the word, it will never, never be used on women in that way. It'll be used from a man talking about another man in a friendly way. Yeah. So you'll say, you know, what's up, cunt? How's it going? if you're really informal with that person, it's a good friend. Almost jokingly, I'll do that sometimes. Like Kel today was saying, we're teaching my son to say g'day, right? So every time I see him, I'm like, g'day, Noah. G'day. G'day, mate. And Kel's like, are you going to make it really Australian? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, you know, g'day, cunt. Like, can't teach him that, man. But
I'm teaching my daughter how to speak with a bit of a Cockney accent sometimes. So I've been teaching her to say, oh, what, mate?
Oh, really?
Which is really good fun. She's 2.5 years old, so she's speaking quite a lot. So I get her to say, oh, what, mate? And it's funny. She's like, oh, what, mate?
And that's and all right, mate, right? Like, and that's another thing you guys use to say hello. I think I saw that in Afterlife. He's like, you're right. And I was like, why is he saying you're right?
Oh, you don't do that in Australia.
No.
So when we meet each other, all right, mate. Yeah, all right. How's it going?
No, we would never do that. I would say
hey, g'day.
G'day. How's it going? Or what's up? But if I said you're right, it'd be more, are you in a problematic situation?
Like, are you okay?
You've broken down on the side of the road and you're doing your tire, you know, trying to replace it. I'd be like, you're all right. Like, are you okay?
If I was English, if I'd broken down and you pull up and go, are you all right? I'd be like, yeah, I'm all right. Are you all right? Yeah, all right, mate.
Far out, man. So, can you, after all the swearing stuff, can you tell me about how you started your podcast?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, like, kind of when I was with my brother in the 80s and stuff, we used to have these tape recorders. You might have had them too. They were sort of like this rectangular shape.
Yeah.
The speaker and a tape deck. And you could tune into the radio and you could record the radio on it.
Yeah.
And they had often little microphones inbuilt and you could record your voice. So my brother and I used to do our own stupid little radio shows, and we would record commercials, you know, adverts and stuff. and fool around doing different voices and things like that. And so I always wanted to do similar things, like record stuff and produce things. And I sort of did a few YouTube videos and some funny things. And but I didn't know where to, you know, what to do with it. I needed an audience, really.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd been teaching at that point for probably about 10 years. And I did a podcasting course at the school that I worked in because I had a special interest. They gave me a special responsibility for technology in the classroom. And this was in like 2008, 2009, just when podcasts were just sort of coming through, and they wanted to know about podcasts. And the idea was that they, at that time in TEFL, in English teaching, people thought that we would be using podcasts in the classroom, like the learners would be making the podcasts. That's what they were thinking. And so my school and the whole course was built around this idea that you can get your students to record podcasts in class, which is like, no, that did not happen at all. And that, you know, I think no one did that. Instead, what happened is, you know, teachers started to podcast and things like that. And that's what I thought. I thought, I can do this. I've got a laptop. I've done this little course, so I know how to do it. And so I know there's an audience of people out there who are learning English in the world. So I need to just make something fun and something kind of personal, make it a bit like a radio show. And hopefully I'll be able to get an audience and sort of, you know, just started from that. And it's carried on. I'm still doing it 11 years later.
Has it changed much since you first began in terms of how you create the episodes and the kind of audience you have?
The episodes are longer than they were in the beginning, so they just crept up and up and up in length.
I feel you.
Which is, yeah. you experiencing that too?
Yeah, and I never checked with anyone. I just sort of did it.
It's hard to keep them short, but you know, you don't have to. It's fine. I think that there's an audience out there of people who want to listen to longer things.
Well, I found at the start, I felt like when I started getting to know the audience a bit more, I sort of realized that I needed to stop sort of patronizing them in terms of thinking that they were beginners or of an intermediate level where they needed mm-hmm. me to slow down or give them simple,
yeah.
you know, content. And ultimately they were just like, speak naturally. Don't be afraid to make them long episodes ultimately, because, you know, slowing down to speak like this won't prepare us for anything. So just, you know, create real interesting content.
Yeah, that's it. I think that ultimately, after 600 and whatever episodes, yeah, part of it is this. It's sort of like two things, really. One thing is that you've just got to give people interesting content that they can listen to. Mm-hmm. The idea is it has to be engaging in some way. They have to want to listen to it. They have to enjoy listening to it. And if they can then use that content to listen more regularly, listen for longer periods and listen long term, this is ultimately extremely good for your English because it gives you tons of input. And, you know, you've got to absorb English as much as possible. You've got to hear what it sounds like
yep.
in order to know how, you know, what the language is. Because the language is not just a system of rules written down or words in a dictionary. It is a communication system. So you've got to hear English actually being used. And I think, you know, so I decided that I just got to make content that's like yeah, that
exactly.
is designed for learners of English. And I talk to learners of English, you know, thinking about them and their needs, but ultimately I'm trying to present them with just interesting, natural conversation that allows them to listen more. And then on the other side, you've got like kind of specific teaching stuff. And that would be teaching language points and doing pronunciation exercises and things. And I used to do that a lot more in my earlier episodes.
Yeah.
There was like definitely a language point in each one. And after a while, I started to break away from that. But I've come back to it because I do my premium episodes and that's all about teaching the language. And I think something like episode 75, it was like, oh, I'm going to just do an episode where I just talk and I've got nothing planned. It was like a really big deal. Like, oh, is this a good idea? I was so concerned that no one would like it. And I did that. It was like, let's see if I can talk for 30 minutes and I stopped it, and I managed to do it. And then I realized, I can just kind of do that. I could just do my kind of late night radio show kind of thing where I just ramble on a little bit and tell stories. And that's equally as good, if not better, than the teaching stuff. So yeah, I think that I always wanted to put my creative energy into doing it and try to do as many weird and different things. And in the archive, I've got loads of pretty odd stuff that I've done which is the great thing about podcasting, is that you can just kind of do anything. So a lot of improvised nonsense, lots of stupid stories and experiments. And I planned a bank robbery with my friends and did a sleep meditation episode where I guide you to sleep. And
you've got the voice for that, so that would probably go pretty well, I think. Yeah, any of those meditation ones? Or
so basically, over the years, I've just really enjoyed having fun with it and using my voice and doing lots of things and doing music and things like that. So I think that's how it's kind of changed. It just became less directly about teaching and more just about producing interesting content that exposes people to English.
I think that's the key. I'm definitely on the same page in terms of, I think, build it and they will come, right? Like, you're going to just put it together, let them show up and then use it how they can without patronizing the audience and trying to, you know, get too much in their head in terms of what they need or would like.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to provide them with just like this sort of monologue of English that goes through their head all the time. I think it must rub off. I'm sure.
Does that weird you out? Have you met anyone yet who's been like, "I know you," and they're like, "I've listened to hundreds of hours of you talking to me directly in my ear holes." Like,
I have met a few people like that. Yeah, because it's quite intense. The sort of, I think the way I do it sometimes, you know, I'm really like trying to intensely make it interesting and quite personal sometimes. And yeah, so I do meet people who have listened to it for years and who, you know, as far as they're concerned, they know everything about me, and it's very odd because I don't know anything about them. So that can be quite a strange experience.
But, I had one where I was in, I don't know if you know much about geography in Australia, but I live in Victoria in the southeast near a town called Melbourne, or a city called Melbourne, second biggest one in Australia. We moved to Canberra, which is the capital, about 8 hours north. And I remember when I first moved there, we were shopping for underwear, funnily enough. And well, other clothes as well, but I remember that I was in the underwear department because I received a message that evening saying, "Hey Pete, saw you buying undies tonight. How are you going?" And just being like, "Why didn't you come and just say something?" just receiving a message saying I was watching you buying underwear. It's freaking weird.
Yeah, it's a little bit bit unnerving, isn't it? I suppose.
And they were like, what did they say? I can't remember exactly, but it was something like, "Oh, I think it would have been weirder for me to come up to you whilst you were buying underwear with your wife and be like, 'Hey, Pete.'"
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So I was like, fair call. But it is interesting because I get a lot that say, "Yeah, I've listened to you for so long and I get to know you," and you have to kind of, you know, remember that you have that impact on people, right? Especially with something like podcasts as opposed to YouTube.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it just gives you a tiny hint of what it might be like to be a famous person.
Yeah.
I worked out yesterday, in fact, my wife worked out that we think that I'm the fourth most famous Luke Thompson in the world.
How did you work that out? You just did a Google search for all the others, did you?
Yeah, she Googled me and she sort of checked to see where I arrived. I was actually third in if you Google Luke Thompson, I actually came third.
Damn.
And so there are two rugby players called Luke Thompson.
It's a pretty common surname, right? So you're doing pretty well to come third or fourth.
Yeah, it's quite it's common in the UK. It's common in Australia, I believe, in New Zealand, and it's common in Canada too. Not so much in America, but... two rugby players. There's a musician, a country musician, I think, called Luke Thompson. And then it's me. But on Google, I actually come third. So I'm either fourth or third in terms of the global rankings for being Luke Thompson.
Who did you push down the rankings?
I don't know. Yeah, the country singer? There's someone else. there's an actor who was in, what's it called? Dunkirk.
Ah, okay.
I think he's an extra because he's on the IMDb, but there's no photo for him.
That's when you know you've made it.
He's just one of the many soldiers that was like standing on the beach.
The dead guy.
So I think I pushed him down to fifth position, maybe.
Bugger.
But it does give you a slight hint of what it's like. I mean, for me, I feel like I'm sort of very well known with some people, but I walk around in my normal life in the streets of Paris where I live. And, you know, people don't notice me or recognize me. But when I'm with my friend Paul, who's quite a famous person here now, people are always stopping him in the street and taking photos of him and stuff.
It's is that, weird. Who, what's his full
Paul
name,
Taylor.
If I can ask?
Paul Taylor.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. He does comedy. He speaks French very, very well. He's a stand-up comedian.
Ah,
he does
brilliant.
Shows in French and English, and he kind of has become quite well-known.
So finishing up, how did you become a comedian? Because you're also that as well as, you know, wearing all these other hats in terms of teaching English.
It was actually the same year that I started doing the podcast. I did the podcast in April, and then I was seeing a girl, and she recommended that I did this comedy course thing, this series of workshops.
So she would have sat you down and said, I think you're a pretty funny cunt.
Yeah, she did actually. She said, because I'd made these videos, which have since been lost, these stupid comedy videos, and she thought they were really funny, and she told me that I should do this course. And so she put me onto it. The relationship didn't last, it didn't work. But I did the course, and basically, yeah, I'd always wanted to do stand-up, but I'd never thought I could do it, you know, and didn't know how to do it, but I always wanted to do it. And in the course, you basically learn the basics of certain things, like even down to like, you know, taking the microphone out of the stand, knowing how to position the microphone, understanding the lights and stuff, and also how to build a set, a 5-minute set. And they, you know, you learn different sort of joke creation techniques and games and things to open up your mind. And the first half of the course was excruciating because like I felt like I wasn't funny, no one was funny, and it was really painful. And we were really like out of our comfort zones all the time. And then for me, around the middle of the course, suddenly it came to me, like I all the things we've been working on just sort of exercised this comedy muscle, and it was like, I think I can come up with funny stuff. And I started writing it all down, and I developed my 5-minute set, and then I started doing it, and my first gigs went quite well, and, you know, I got the bug for it. And once you kind of get the bug for doing stand-up, it's very hard to stop. I didn't do it enough in London because it's, you know, difficult to travel around and all that stuff. And then I moved to France, and funnily enough, there's a little comedy scene in English here.
No kidding.
And I kind of jumped into that, and that was fantastic, and it kind of really helped. Because I got suddenly a perspective and a voice and a uniqueness. You know, either they're French people watching me, or it's American people, Brits and other people. And so, you know, I was able to lean on my whole kind of Britishness a bit more, which kind of is quite fruitful for doing comedy. So that's it. And so I still do stand-up comedy, and I've kind of hopefully brought some of it into the podcast a bit. You know, it just allows me to kind of do funny stuff sometimes.
Well, I think we need more of that, though, right? In today's day and age, we need more people to be have a sense of humor, not take themselves too seriously. Comedy is very important.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we've always got to try and have a laugh. It's good for you. It's like swearing.
Yeah, that's it.
It's actually good for you.
I've kept you for 30 minutes, and we're about to switch over onto your podcast. So as we finish up, where can people find out more about you and what you do, Luke?
So probably the best place is just my website. So that's teacherluke.co.uk, teacherluke.co.uk. And they can find most of the stuff there, all my episodes, the premium stuff, and all the other things that I do. Also, is my YouTube channel, which is just Luke's English Podcast on YouTube. Or you can just search for Luke's English Podcast. I've got an app as well, so you can listen to all my episodes there. It's the Luke's English Podcast app on the App Store.
On the phone soon.
Yes.
If you search Luke Thomas 2, you'll be third on Google, right?
Third or fourth in the list, depending on whether that actor has got another job yet or not.
Well, Luke Thompson, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.